We're about to start Brachot Daf Gimel. Congratulations to everyone who's made it this far. Before we pick up from the bottom of Bet Amud Bet at the two dots, just want to make a quick correction. I said, I believe, in last shiur that Reishit Chochma Yirat Hashem was a pasuk in Mishlei. That's actually Reishit Chochma Kona Chochma. Reishit Chochma Yirat Hashem is a pasuk in Tehillim. Okay, just to remind ourselves what exactly we were up to. Rabbi Yehuda challenged Rabbi Meir's position. Rabbi Meir believed that the earliest time that someone could start reciting Kriyat Shema was at the time that the Kohanim would go to the mikvah to betahir themselves, make themselves pure, to eat from the Truma. Rabbi Yehuda pointed out, that's in the middle of the day. They do the Tevila in the mikvah, mi be'od yom. How could Rabbi Meir suggest that the Kohanim would Rabbi Meir suggests that one could say Kriyat Shema at the time in the middle of the day when the Kohanim were going to the mikvah. Amar Mar, Amar Lo, Rabbi Yehuda, V'halo Kohanim Yibod Yomim Tovlim? Is it not true that Kohanim go to the mikvah during the day? How could you suggest that that's an appropriate time to say Kriyat Shema of the evening? Shaper Kamalei Rehuda. That's a good question Rabbi Yehuda asked to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir would respond as follows. Mi savar de'ana abein ha-shmashu didcha ka'amina. Who says that I hold by your bein ha-shmashu, Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda's approach to bein ha-shmashu was that bein ha-shmashu is basically an extended period of doubtful day and doubtful night. We're not sure if this is night or day, and it's a very long period that we're not sure whether this time period is considered night or day. So Rabbi Meir says, Rabbi Yehuda, I actually don't hold by your bein ha-shmashot, so I don't have this problem. Ana bein ha-shmashot de Rabbi Yosi ka'amina. I hold by Rabbi Yosi's bein ha-shmashot. Damar Rabbi Yosi bein ha-shmashot keheref ayin zeh nechnas v'zeyot zevi efshar la'amod alav. Rabbi Yosi says that bein ha-shmashot is like the blink of an eye. Right? Day leaves and nighttime begins in a brief moment. In which case, yes, I hold that the Kriyat Shema can be recited from the time the Kohanim do Tevila, because the Kohanim do Tevila a matter of moments before nightfall, not before Bein HaShmashot, which is almost an hour before nightfall, rather mere moments before nightfall, and therefore it's appropriate to start saying Kriyat Shema at the time that the Kohanim could be going to the mikvah. Okay, before we get into the next part of the Gemara on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph, first I think we need to remind ourselves of what exactly the shitas that we mentioned, the different approaches that we mentioned at the beginning of when one could say Kriyat Shema in the evening that we mentioned yesterday. So first of all, we had our Mishnah, which is that the earliest time is when the Kohanim start eating their Truma. We attributed that shita to Rabbi Eliezer. And then we had the Reisha of that Mishnah that we didn't see inside, but it's on Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, which is when the Aniyim go in to eat their meals. That's the Mishnah. Additionally, we had a Braita, which was a machloka between Rabbi Meir, who said it's when people eat Erev Shabbat, and Chachamim, who say it's when Kohanim eat their Truma. And finally, we had a Braita with a number of different Shitas. Rabbi Eliezer held it's when Shabbos starts on Friday afternoon. Rabbi Yeshua holds it's when the Kohanim were Tahor to eat their Truma. Rabbi Meir held it's when the Kohanim would go to the Mikvah. Rabbi Chanina held that it was when the Anim would start eating their meal. Rabbi Eliezer held that it was when everyone else started eating their meal. Now, if you noticed, we mentioned Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Meir twice in two different sources, and they don't hold by the same opinions. So now we need to resolve that seeming contradiction that exists between their approaches. Kasha de Rabbi Meir ad Rabbi Meir. I have a difficulty from one position of Rabbi Meir onto another position of Rabbi Meir. Trei Tani Aliba de Rabbi Meir. No, the solution is that there are actually two Tanaim who are arguing about what Rabbi Meir actually held. This isn't a contradiction within Rabbi Meir's words. This is two different Tanaim who are arguing over what Rabbi Meir actually said. Now, there's a Rashi in Ketubot that points out that we don't like giving this answer. We only give it if we absolutely have to. In general, when there was a debate, when there's a machloket, we say, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, meaning that we both follow the necessary process to clarify the answer, and both things exist as kind of legitimate perspectives within the world of Torah, but we have to, for practical purposes, paskin like one of the sides, but they both have a side of truth to them. But says Rashi, actually, if two Tanaim are arguing over what a third Tana said, that isn't Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. That Tana said one thing and not the other. In which case, because we don't see both of these shitas as significant or as potentially being true, one of them is right and one of them is wrong, and we'll avoid giving that answer at all costs unless it's clear that that's what's going on. Similarly, we have Kashi de Rabbi Eliezer, Ad Rabbi Eliezer, right? Because Rabbi Meir in the Braita said that the earliest time is Erev, is when people would eat Erev Shabbat, and then in the later Braita said that it was when the Kohanim would go to the mikvah. And Rabbi Eliezer said that the earliest time was when Kohanim were eating Truma, but then he said in the later Braita that it was when Shabbat started on Friday afternoon. So similarly, we have a kasha to Rabbi Eliezer, Ad Rabbi Eliezer, two contradictory shitas. So Trey Tanai Ali with Rabbi Eliezer. You could say, similarly, that how we said by Rabbi Meir, yeah, Inachinami, there are two Tanaim who are arguing over what Rabbi Eliezer actually held. V by Ema, alternatively, you could offer the following answer. Reshalav Rabbi Eliezer. Actually, the beginning of our Mishnah is not the shita of Rabbi Eliezer. Well, it's difficult. Doesn't it seem like it is the shita of Rabbi Eliezer? Well, we actually brought two different times. We brought the earliest time, which was the Kohanim eating Truma, and the latest time, which was after the first shift of the night. After we mentioned the latest time, we said Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So, saying that the ratio of our Mishnah is not actually Rabbi Eliezer would just mean that when we said the earliest time you could daven Kriyat Shema, we didn't mean to say that Divrei Rabbi Eliezer went on the earliest time as well. When we said Divrei Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah, that was only speaking about the latest time, meaning it is Rabbi Eliezer's Shita that it's Ad Sofa Ashmura HaRishona, but not Rabbi Eliezer's Shita that it's when the Kohanim start eating from their Truma. Okay, just to give a little bit of background about this Ashmura, the shift of the night. Basically, the night is divided into 12 equal parts, as is the day. These are halachic hours. There need to be 12 hours of the night and 12 hours of the day. But there are different shifts, different distinct periods of the night that the night is divided into. And there's a debate as to whether or not there were four shifts or three shifts. If there were three shifts, then each one would be 4 hours. If there were four shifts, then each one would be 3 hours. Determining what exactly the length of the shift is and how many shifts there are is critical to understanding Rabbi Eliezer's Shita. In fact, the Ohel Yitzchak suggests that the machloket that we're going to see between Rebbe and Rav Natan later on in the daf, its significance is that they both may hold like Rabbi Eliezer, in that in order to understand what our latest time to daven Kriyat Shema in the evening is, whether or not we have 4 hours after nightfall or 3 hours after nightfall, we need to understand how many shifts the night is divided into. That has tremendous practical significance in how late we can daven Shema for. Okay, from the two dots. Ada Sofa Shmura. My Kasava Rabbi Eliezer. What is Rabbi Eliezer's Shita? What does he hold? Ikasava Shalosh Mishmarot, Have Laila, Lema Ad Arba Shaot. Ikasava Arba Mishmarot, Have Laila, Lema Ad Shalosh Shaot. If Rabbi Eliezer believes that there are four shifts of the night, he should have just said, you have until the end of the third hour. And if he believes that there are three shifts of the night, he should have just said, you have until the end of the fourth hour. Meaning, instead of giving me an exact time that I know to stop, he tells me until the first third of the night. That's not a very clear answer. Why wouldn't he just tell me the exact amount of hours that I have to daven? That way I have a clear answer of when I need to stop davening. So really he holds that there are three mishmarot, meaning they're all 4 hours. And what did Rabbi Eliezer want to teach you? That actually there are three distinct periods, phases of the night that are actually discernible in the night sky. Similarly, there are three distinct periods in Shemayim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu recognizes as well as three phases of the night. How do we know that? D'tanya, we learned in a Braita, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Shalosh Mishmarot Havi HaLaila Vel Kol Mishmar V'Mishmar Yoshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Shoeg Ka'ari. Rabbi Eliezer taught that there are three distinct time periods, three watches of the night, and after every single watch, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sits and roars like a lion. Shneamar, as it's stated, Hashem Marom Yishag, Umimaon Kotcho Yiten Kolo Shoeg Yishag, Shaog Yishag, Al Noho. The three times that in this pasuk it speaks about Hashem roaring, the three mentionings of roar indicates that God roars at three different points. Rabbi Eliezer believes that those three different points are after the three different shifts of the night, each one being 4 hours long. The Simon Ladavar, now Rabbi Eliezer gives you a sign to know what part of the night that you're in. Mishmar Rishona Chamor Noer. In the first Mishmar, a donkey is braying. The donkeys are braying. Shnia Klavim Tzoakim. In the second Mishmar, the dogs are barking. Shlishi Tinok Yonek Mishadei Imo Ve'isha Misaperet Dimbala. And the third shift, that's when babies start nursing and when husband and wife are speaking to each other in the morning before they get up. Maika Chashiv Rabbi Lazer. Itchilat Mishmarot Kachashiv Tchilat Mishmera Rishona Siman Alamali. So is Rabbi Eliezer counting when Rabbi Eliezer gives a siman? Is he saying that this is the siman of the beginning of the Mishmera, or at the beginning of the Ashmura, the beginning of the watch? Or is he saying the siman is at the end, meaning when the donkey is braying? Is that when the first shift starts? Is that when the first shift ends? Because seemingly, if it's when the first shift starts, why would I need a siman for the first shift starting? Or to who? It's night. Beforehand it was day, now it's night. I'm very aware that the first shift has started. Isof Mishmarot Kachashiv, and if he's giving simanim for the end of the Mishmarot, meaning, no, actually, when the donkey starts praying, that's the end of the first Mishmar. Sof Mishmar Achrona Lamali. Why would I need the end of Lamali Simana? Why would I need a siman for the end of the final Mishmar? Yimamahu. It's the daytime. I know that the night has ended because it's day. Right, so what does he give you? Actually gives you a sign for the end of the first Mishmar, the beginning of the final Mishmar, and the middle of the middle Mishmar. Those are what the Simanim are. Alternatively, you could say, Kulhu Sof Mishmarot Kachashiv. Really, he gives you the siman for the end of each Mishmar, the end of the first, the end of the second, and the end of the third, and then you'd have to ask, okay, well, why would you need the end of the third? Don't I know that it's morning? If you want to say that the last one isn't really necessary, so what's the practical distinction? Why do you give me a siman for the final Mishmar? Right, so someone who lives in a dark house, so he can't see outside, he has no idea what time it is. Now he knows exactly when he can say Kriyat Shema. Right, when a child starts nursing, or when husband and wife are waking up and speaking to each other before they get out of bed, that's the time that he can start already saying Kriyat Shema. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Mishmei Derab Gimel Mishmarot Havei Alayla. Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Shmuel said in the name of Rav that there are three distinct shifts in the night. And after every Mishmar, after every watch, Kadosh Baruch Hu sits and he roars like a lion. Why is he roaring like a lion? It's kind of an odd statement we said earlier. What's he roaring about? The Omer, Oy lebanim shebavonotei mechravti et beiti v'seravti et echalevi v'iglitim levein umot ha'olam. And he says, woe is to my children that because of their sins, I destroyed my house and I burnt my sanctuary and I exiled them amongst the nations of the world. Meaning, he's doing this because he's mourning over the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu is roaring. He's mourning the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and the exile of his children. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yossi. Now we're going to have a story about this idea that a Kadosh Baruch Hu stays up at night and mourns over the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Pam achar hayiti me'alech b'derech v'nichnasti l'chorba, echad mechorbot Yerushalayim, v'litpalel. Rabbi Yossi says, one time I was on my way and I entered into one of the ruins in Jerusalem because I wanted to daven. Ba'ali yahu zechor l'tov v'shamar li ala petach ad shesiyamti. Right? Eliyahu Hanavi came and he guarded the entrance until I finished. Tfilati, until I finish my davening. L'chash siyamti tfilati, amar li shalom alecha rebi. Amar tilo, shalom alecha rebi mori. After I finished my tefillah, he said, hello to you, my rabbi. And I said to him, hello to you, my rabbi, my teacher. Amar li b'ni m'pnei ma'anich nachta l'chor bazo. He asked me, why did I enter into this ruin in Jerusalem? Amar tilo litpalel. I said, I was davening. V'amar lo, hayalecha litpalel b'derech. He told me I should have davened along the way. Amar tilo mitirei hayiti, shem yifsakeni bi over a drachim. I thought that people who were passing by would have interrupted my davening, so I didn't want to stay on the street. He said, okay, then you should have just davened a shortened tefillah. We'll speak about that later in Bracha, what exactly a shortened tefillah is. From that conversation with Eliyahu Navi, I learned from him three different things. I learned that you're not supposed to enter into a ruin in Jerusalem, or a ruin at all. And I learned that you're allowed to stop along the way to daven. And I learned that if you are going to stop along the way to daven, you should daven a shortened tefillah. Amarli, Eliyahu continued to have this conversation. Amarli bni, he said, my son, ma kol shamata b'chorba zo, what voice did you hear when you were davening in this chorba? Amarti lo shamati bat kol. I heard a bat kol, a heavenly voice come out. Shemenehemet kiyona. It was groaning like a dove. Ve'omeret oy lebanim shebeavonoteim nichravti et beiti v'seravti et echal v'iglitim lebein ha'umot. It said that the voice was groaning like a dove, and it was saying, woe is to my children who, because of their sins, I destroyed my home and I burnt my sanctuary and I exiled them amongst the nations of the world. That's interesting, by the way, that this is the same statement we saw earlier, which is why we brought up the story, but here he's groaning like a dove, and beforehand he was roaring like a lion. ואמר לי, חייך וחייך ירושה שלוש שעה זו בלבד אומרת כך, אין לה בכל יום ויום שלוש פעמים אומרת כך. So Eliyahu said to him, on your life and the life of your head, not just at this time was he mourning and saying that statement. Rather, he says that three times every single day. Vilozo bilvad, not only this, Ela b'shashitzo nechnesim lebat ha-knesim lebat ha-midrash ha-duva onin yeshmer gadol mevorach gadosh b'chom b'nei roshav v'morash re'a melech shemekalasim utav v'beitav kach malu le'av shehigle ad benav oy lehem lebanim shegalu me'al shulchan aviyem. Right, there's another statement actually of mourning that a Kaddish Baruch Hu says. When did he say it? When you're in a Beit Knesset or in a Beit Midrash, and you say the special tefillah of Yeheshmei Rabam Vorach, or Yeheshmei HaGadol, which may be the same exact tefillah, a Kaddish Baruch Hu shakes his head and he says, fortunate is a king who is praised in his home like this, and woe is to a father who had to exile his children, and woe is to the children who were banished from the, who were kicked out of the shulchan, the table of their father. So similarly, when God hears this tefillah, he has similar expressions of mourning. Basically, God mourns consistently throughout the day and night over the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and the necessity that he had to exile us from Israel. Tanu Rabbanan. Now we're going to go back to discuss the going into the Chorba, because we mentioned you're not supposed to go into a Chorba. That's where Yossi would learn from Eliyahu. We have to ask exactly why. There are three distinct reasons why you're not supposed to go into a Chorba, and we're going to see that you actually need all three, because there are situations where one or two of them don't apply. Right? Because it looks suspicious that perhaps that you're going there and you're going to be suspected of going there to meet a prostitute, because you're going there to a dark place alone, so you have to avoid it. Because we're afraid. The second reason is we're afraid that a wall might fall in. It's not a very sturdy structure and it's very dangerous. And the third is from the mazikin, who are these damaging forces or creatures like shadim. Now we're going to go over why it was necessary to bring in all three of those reasons. Bipnei chashad, why did I need to say bipnei chashad? Because we're concerned that it looks like you're doing something sketchy by, you know, perhaps going to meet a prostitute there. Tipuklei mishum apolet. You could have just said, well, we're afraid that the wall is going to fall down. And if we're afraid the wall is going to fall down, it doesn't matter what it looks like you're doing. You already shouldn't go in there. Bechadati. No, we're talking about a new ruin. A new ruin where the walls are still structurally sound, and we're not concerned that it's going to fall in. Okay, but still, it would have been enough to just say that we're concerned about mazikin, right? Even if it's new and we're not concerned about the walls falling in, we're still concerned about mazikin. Why did I have to mention that there's a chashad of meeting a prostitute there at all? Betray. Because we're talking about if you're going with two people. And mazikin do not attack two people who are going together. Mazikin only attack individuals. I betray chashad nami leka. Hold on a second. If there are two people, you also don't have to be concerned about that it looks like you're going to meet a prostitute, because there's no prohibition of secluding yourself with one man and one woman. Meaning the moment two men are there, it's no longer a problem of yichud. So if there are two men there, we're not going to suspect that you're going to meet a prostitute, and therefore, because there are two men there, we no longer have the concern of the chashad. I'm sorry, I explained that wrong. Again, we're talking about when there are two people there. There are two people, mazikin. I'm sorry, I explained it right initially. Ibitrei chashat nami leika, right? So if there are two people there, then you shouldn't have the suspicion that you're going to meet a prostitute at all, because once there are two people there, I no longer have that concern. No, betray. Betray upritzi. We're talking about two people, and those two people are prutzim, meaning they're people who are established and recognize that they are involved in illicit sexual behaviors. Now, people who are kosher and they refrain from illicit sexual behaviors, they are allowed to be two men and one woman in a room. However, the moment these people are involved in illicit sexual relationships, we don't assume that having two people there is going to stop them from doing that. So even if you have two people, or once you have two people, rather, the mazikin no longer attack. However, if they're two prutzim, you still have the concern of the chashad that it looks like you're up to something no good. Bipnei hamapolet v'tipuklei mishum chashad. Meaning, okay, why do I need to bring in the concern about mapolet at all? Why do I need to mention that I'm concerned that a wall might fall? I could have just said that I'm concerned that it looks like you're not doing that you're doing something sketchy. Umazikin. Alternatively, I could have said that I'm concerned about the mazikin coming to attack you. Betray ukshari. No. We're talking about there are two people, and because there are two people, the mazikin don't attack, and they're both kosher. And if they're both kosher, then it doesn't look like you're going to meet a prostitute there. In which case, the only concern that we have left in a case where two people, two kosher people, are walking by a churba is that we're concerned that the mapolet, that a wall might fall in, and so even in that case, you shouldn't go into a churba. Bipnei mazikin. Okay, well, why don't I need to say that there's a concern of mazikin? I could have just said you can't go in there because it looks like you're up to something sketchy. Alternatively, we're afraid that the wall's going to fall in. No, we're talking about a new churba where the walls are still structurally sound, and therefore I don't have the same concern. Ubetrei kasheri. And similarly, I'm also talking about when there are two people who are walking there and they're both kosher. So because there are two people walking there and they're both kosher, I don't have to be concerned about the chashad factor, right? But then the Gemara asks, Ibetrei mazikin nami leka. But one second, there are two people and they're both kosher and they're walking there? Then I shouldn't have to be concerned about the mazikin either, because we just established earlier that mazikin don't attack people when they're with other people. Mazikin only attack individuals. No. In a place where it is common that mazikin attack, that is known that there are a lot of attacks there, even when two people are going together, we're still going to be concerned. That's why we needed all three reasons to cover all of our bases. V'bayt ema, alternatively, you can give another answer. Meaning, you could say it was one person who was walking, and he was, and the ruin was a new one, so we weren't concerned about the wall falling in, and it was in a field. The hata mishum chashad leka, right? We don't have the same suspicions when you go into a chorba in a field in terms of going to meet a prostitute there. Tahaisha v'dabra lo shricha, because women generally don't hang out in fields. Umishum zikin ika. However, there's still a concern about the mazikin. So you have the concern about the mazikin because the mazikin will be in the field. The woman will not be in the field, most likely. And so in that case, so you wouldn't have that concern. And because it is a new churba, we're not concerned about the wall. And that's why we need a distinct teaching to tell me that mazikin, concern for mazikin is a sufficient reason not to go into a churba. Okay. Tan Rabbanan. Arba mishmarot havi alayla divrei Rebbe. Now we're getting into the machloka between Rebbe and Natan regarding how many shifts the night should actually be divided into. So according to Rebbe, there are four shifts, meaning each one is 3 hours long. Rav Natan omer shalosh. So he says that there's three shifts of the night, and each one is 4 hours long. My time with Rabbi Natan. How does Rabbi Natan deduce this answer? So Rav Natan brings in a pasuk from Shoftim, where Gidon brings 100 people to the edge of the camp, and he does that in the middle watch, the middle shift of the night. What does it mean that it's the middle watch? It means there's one before it and there's one after it. Therefore, you have three watches. So how does Rebbe answer what Tichona is referring to there? Seemingly, Rav Natan has a very strong proof. So what is how does Rebbe respond to this? No, that's referring to one of the two middle watches. Rav Natan, how would Rav Natan respond to the way Rebbe reads this? Does it say that Gidon came in one of the two middle watches? No, it just says that he came in the middle watch. So the pshat of that pasuk is that there are only three watches because this one is the middle one. My time with Rebbe. Okay, so where does Rebbe derive his approach from? Amar Bizrekah, Amar Rebbe Yeshua ben Levi, Katuv Echad Omer Chatzot Laila Akum Lodot Lecha Amishpatei Tzedek. So one pasuk by David HaMelech in Tehillim says that in the middle of the night I will get up to thank you or to give thanks to you over your righteous judgment. Uktuv Echad, and another pasuk by David HaMelech in Tehillim says Kadmu Einai Ashmarot. I wake up Ashmarot early, right? Meaning I get up to Ashmarot early, right? The minimum of Ashmarot, which is the plural of shifts, is two. So David has to be waking up at least two shifts early. Haketzad arba mishmarot havi alayla, right? So it must be that if he wakes up halfway through the night, two shifts before the end of the night, then there are four shifts of the night. And that's Rabbi Shita. But how does Rav Natan respond to this? Rav Natan savor like Rabbi Yeshua. He holds like Rabbi Yeshua. Ditznan, Rabbi Yeshua omer, ad shalosh sha'ot shekein derech malachim lamor b'shalosh sha'ot shi delilia v'tarte di yamama. Meaning, when David said that he woke up two shifts early, Was he talking about two shifts before the end of the night? He doesn't say that. He just says early. Normally, kings wake up in the third hour of the day, meaning that they sleep 2 hours into the day. So if David wakes up at Chatzot, he has 6 hours left of the night. And then normal kings sleep 2 hours into the day. David wakes up 8 hours before normal kings, which is the same length of two Ashmarot, two distinct shifts. So Rebbe says this means he wakes up at Chatzot two shifts before the end of the night, meaning there are two shifts beforehand. But Rav Natan believes, no, he wakes up two shifts before the other kings. They wake up 2 hours into the middle of the day. He wakes up at Chatzot. Havul hu shtei mishmarot. That's the same length as two mishmarot. Rav Ashi amar mishmarot, palgana mishmarot kali. Rav Ashi answers it differently, and he says, no, actually, when David says that he wakes up two mishmarot early, he's referring to a mishmar and a half, but you're allowed to call a mishmar and a half two mishmarot because it is half of one, and then the entirety of a completely distinct one. Therefore, you do cover two different mishmarot. V'am Rabbi Zreka, Amar Rabbi Ami, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Ein Om Rabbi Fnei HaMeit, Ela Dvarav Shel Meit. You're only supposed to say over a dead body that which is specifically pertinent to the dead body. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kana, Lo Amran Ela B'Divrei Torah, Aval Mili De'Alma Leitlan Ba. Rabbi Ami says, that's only talking about Divrei Torah. If you have to say Divrei Torah, you only speak about things that are absolutely necessary, the halachot, regarding the mate. However, if it's not Divrei Torah, it's just normal conversation, then you can speak about whatever you want. V'ikada Amri, Amar Rabbi Ami Bar Kana, afilu b'Divrei Torah, v'kol shekein milei de'alma. He says, no. By Divrei Torah, you can only speak about things that are pertinent to the deceased. All the more so, everything else, you're only allowed to speak about what's pertinent to the deceased. Why would it be that you can't speak about Divrei Torah in front of the dead body unless it's specifically pertinent to him? So Rashi answers that we're concerned here for Loeg L'Rosh. Loeg L'Rosh, I believe, is the concept we first see in Mishlei, where it's basically mocking the less fortunate. In context, it refers to anim, poor people, but in a halachic context, we refer to it as dead people, because dead people are unfortunate in that they cannot perform mitzvot anymore. And therefore, we, who have the opportunity to perform mitzvot and that are therefore fortunate, cannot perform mitzvot in front of dead people. So the only Torah that we're allowed to discuss in front of them is things that are specifically pertinent to them. We see a similar concept if you go into a Beit Kvar, if you go into a seminary, you're supposed to tuck in your tzitzit, because that's similarly Loeg L'Rosh. They don't have the concept of tzitzit. They're not having a mitzvah, and so we're not supposed to mock that we have the opportunity to do a mitzvah while they no longer have the opportunity to do mitzvah. Now, it's interesting that we make a kal v'chomer of sorts. We basically say that the second opinion is that no. By Torah, you're only allowed to speak about what's pertinent. Kal v'chomer, everything else, you're only allowed to speak about what's pertinent. Well, why is that a normal kal v'chomer? I know why Torah is a problem to speak in front of a dead body. It's loeg l'rosh. But what's the problem of speaking? I mean, I should just be able to say anything I want as long as it's not Torah. So the Ritva says that the problem is like this. A, it could be because you're being mevat, meaning as long as you're speaking about other things, you're being mevatel your mitzvah to be dealing with the bit. Alternatively, it could be that you have a responsibility to the deceased who, until he's buried, knows exactly what you're saying about him to be careful not to make him suffer by making him wait to be buried. Meaning, he's going to hear that you're doing other things instead of dealing with his burial, and he's going to be in tremendous pain from it. And we learn that out from Vasita Ve'ashar Ve'atov V'nei Hashem. This is the pasuk that Ritva basically uses to apply to going lifnim mishurat adin, above and beyond, going within the letter of the law in order to prevent any situation of unfairness or discomfort for other people. That is how we know that our obligation to the dead, to even the deceased, extends so far as not to deal with things that isn't related to their death in front of them because it pains them. Now, we're going to get into some more stories about David HaMelech and how we know the Ashmirot HaLaila, the different shifts of the night from David. Did David really wake up in the middle of the night? He woke up at the beginning of the night. Right? That I got up at the Neshef, at the beginning of the night, beginning of the evening, and I David. Wait, how do you know that Neshef refers to the beginning of the night? Because it says that the Neshef of the evening, the beginning of the evening, is when it becomes dark. Me'olam lo avar alai chatzot laila v'sheina. No, it's not that David woke up at chatzot. It's that he never slept through chatzot, but b'nistam, he woke up beforehand. Rabbi Zera amar at chatzot laila hayamit namneim kisus mikan ve'ilach hayamit gaber kari. Rabbi Zera says, no, it was in and out before chatzot. He woke up at the beginning of the night, but he was kind of in and out. Once chatzot came, he really woke up like a lion. Rav Ashi amar at chatzot laila hayosek b'divrei Torah mikan ve'ilach b'shuv tishbachot. Rav Ashi said that he would learn Torah from the beginning of the night until chatzot. At chatzot, he would get up, not wake up, but he would get up from his learning, so that way he could daven. V'neshef ortahu, is neshef really a reference to the evening? Ha-neshef tzafrahu, but we have a reference to neshef, meaning morning. Ha-dechdi v'yakem David me-ha-neshef ad ha-erev, right? From the neshef to the evening, l'machratam. Sounds like from the morning to the evening. My love, mitzafra, is it not a reference? Is this neshef not a reference from mitzafra that David HaMelech will be doing this from morning till evening? Ve'ad lilia? Lo, me'orta ve'ad orta. No, it just means he would do it from evening until evening of the next day. Yachi lichtov me'aneshef ad aneshef o'me'erev ad ha'erev. Then why do you use different terminology? You should have just said that David's doing this from the evening until the evening, or from the neshef until the neshef. Why would you different terminology neshef until erev? That makes it sound like they're two different things. Ela amar Rava trei neshvihave. Really, there are two types of neshef. Neshef lilia ba'ati yama. Right, the end of the night, and then the day comes. Neshef yamama ba'ati lilia. The end of the day, and then the night comes. V'david mihave yada palga de lilia. Emat, did David know exactly when chatzot was? That's a shock. Why? Hashta Moshe Rabbeinu lo avi yada dich. Because Moshe Rabbeinu didn't even know exactly when chatzot was. Dichtiv ki chatzot delayla. Because Moshe said that it was going to happen about Mako Bechor. It was happening about chatzot, about midnight. Ani yotzei betoch Mitzrayim, he says about God, that God is coming out at about midnight. My kichatzot. So why did he say kichatzot? Why about chatzot? Ilei madamar lekucha brichu o kichatzot. Are you assuming that God told Moshe that he was coming at kichatzot? Mi ika sveika kama shemaya. God knows exactly when chatzot is. Of course, there's a Rashi when he quotes this midrash. The Rashi says the concern was that, of course, God knew that. God knew when chatzot was. But people didn't know when chatzot was. They were going to calculate it wrong, and they were going to use any possible opportunity they could have said to say, oh, God was wrong, God isn't in control. He said it was going to come chatzot, and he came a second later. Really, God came in exactly at chatzot. But they were going to miscalculate it and try to use any small window to doubt God's existence. But that's not what the Gemara says. Ika svega kamei, God, there's no way that God has a doubt here. Ela de amar le bichatzot lemachar kiashta ve'ata ihu amar kichatzot. God told him that I'm coming bichatzot. But when Moshe came out, he said kichatzot because he didn't know. Ama misvakele, Moshe didn't know exactly when chatzot was. You can't calculate such with such precision. So how did David HaMelech, David HaVayada, how could David HaMelech have known such a precise time? David Siman HaVale, David Siman, Damar Rav Acha Bar Bizna, Amar Rav Shimon Chasida, Kinor Yata Lui Lemala Mitzatosh El David, Kivan Sheyeh Chatzot Laila Baruch, Tzvonim Nishevet Bo, David put a kinor, a harp, in the direction of north, so that at midnight, when the northern winds start blowing, they would come and blow and play the harp over his bed, and then he would immediately get up and start learning Torah. Until Amud Shachar came, Chachamim of Israel would come and speak to David. Israel tzrichin parnasa. Israel is poor. We need food. We need sustenance. Amar lehem lechuvit parnasuz. That means that you should go get parnasa one from the other. The rich should give it to the poor. Amar lo ena komet matzbiyat tari. There's not enough to satisfy the actual things that we need. Ve'ena bor mitmelem lechuliyato. Meaning, you can't dig dust or dirt out of a pre-existing pit and then fill the pit up with what you took out of the pit already. You need to take it from somewhere else if you want to fill that pit. Amalem lechu pashriya dechem digdud. He says, okay, you'll go, you know, take spoils from a war. We're going to see the different stages that they took before going out to war, who they need to ask, and why they needed to ask tomorrow.